Hey all, before we start today's episode, I want to quickly tell you about a new offering from our friends at Jelly Smack. You may know Jelly Smack for helping creators go from one social platform to multiple, but they recently announced a new way to help creators. And since Lauren works there, I feel like she should be the one to update you all on it.
Thanks, Josh. So Jelly Smack has expanded its creator program and opened it up to short form creators, aka TikTokers. That means that Jelly Smack is now using its tech to optimize and distribute TikTok videos across other platforms like Facebook Reels, Snapchat, and YouTube Shorts.
That is really exciting, like honestly, because we all know TikTok is awesome, but let's be honest, a lot of creators struggle to figure out how to make money on it.
Exactly. This will help TikTok creators better monetize their videos and reach even more fans. And even though it is a fairly new announcement, I have to brag that we have already signed 30 leading TikTokers, including SpicyCam and Nick Smithyman.
Love it. How do people get more info?
Just go to jellysmack.com, click get in touch, and tell them Creator Upload sent you.
This week on Creator Upload, is Addison Rae the next Barbie? YouTube's getting good at long form, but needs those shorts to stay hip with the kids. And Aaliyah Dobb tells us about sneakers and onboarding creators to crypto.
Welcome to Creator Upload, your creator economy podcast. I am Lauren Schnipper.
And I'm Joshua Cohen. Lauren.
Yes.
When's the last time you were in the Walmart?
You know, they don't have any Walmarts in LA.
Do they really not?
They don't, actually. It's a thing.
In like LA County or the city, or like where's the closest Walmart?
My understanding is LA County does not have any. I've never seen one in LA. I feel like there's one somewhere, I've never seen a Walmart in Los Angeles proper county or the surrounding suburbs. True story. Didn't expect that, did you?
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And we'll have to fact check it later.
I'm telling you, this is something I have fact checked. It is true. It could have changed since I fact checked it, but I know that was a thing. Go on. Are you fact checking it right now? He's fact checking it right now. He doesn't believe me. He doesn't believe me. He thinks I'm just like a snob and won't go to Walmart. I'm telling you, there's no Walmarts in LA.
There's a Walmart FedEx pickup location.
Okay. Need I say more?
So whether or not there are Walmarts in LA, debatable. Uh-huh. You say there aren't. Interesting.
Yeah.
When you find yourself next venturing into one, you mm-hmm. know who you might see there?
You tell me.
None other than Addison Rae.
That's crazy.
Why might you see Addison Rae there? Because Addison Rae is launching her own toy doll line. And it's going to be sold at Walmart. Each box will come with a QR code, which can be scanned to play an empowering message recorded by Rae. She said, and I quote, "I've dreamt of having my own doll line since I was a little girl. I worked with Bonkers Toys on every detail of the dolls and toys to inspire young kids to dream big." What are some of those details? Well, at least according to the promotional images on the box covers, there are things like Addison Rae cares about body positivity. Addison Rae cares about female entrepreneurship. And there's fashion accessory packs, deluxe music dolls. I dig the message here. I think they just should have gone with the name Addison instead of Addison Rae. That's my two cents. Joe Izzy, if you're listening, I think just a doll brand by the name of Addison would have done bigger, better. Could have competed with Barbie a little bit more. But kind of interesting. I don't think we've seen this from anyone other than toy creators before. And it's fitting that Bonkers, who is the person that mm-hmm. Addison Rae and team are partnering with, also has worked with Ryan's World.
Yeah, of course. That's the big one. No, it's huge. This is I love also the QR code piece of it. I just like love the quote of like, "I've dreamt of having my own doll line since I was a kid." And I'm just like, what did you dream exactly? That you were going to have your face on a doll and you're going to be in Walmart? Like, I don't.
Is that not every girl's dream? Does every girl share that dream?
Way to dream big. No, as you can imagine, I wasn't really into dolls. So I wasn't like dreaming of my own doll line. But like, even if I was into dolls, like, I don't know that I would have had the foresight to like, so like, you know, again, Addison Rae, I mean, kudos to having big dreams. No, this is huge. This is amazing. This is not shocking. And I really enjoyed the QR code piece. I think that's just more we're going to see. I mean, it's not totally uncommon to see things like this now, but I just think it's even more. We're going to see more of that. Like, it's probably going to be an NFT next time on the QR code. You know what I mean? Like, I just think it's going to, if this is successful, that's what we're going to see next.
Something like that, for sure. It'll be interesting to see how this sells, because I don't think of Addison as having like, she obviously has a massive fan base. And, you know, she's all over the tabloids too, like all the time. She's one of the top people now.
The fact that she's selling, it's interesting to see that she's selling dolls, which are arguably for like younger probably audience. So that speaks to like, they've obviously done some like research there that, you know, gives them the idea that, that she's going to have a lot of like really young fans that are going to want to buy this. So that's interesting to me too.
Right. I don't think Bonkers and Walmart are going to want to mess around. And her Hulu show did get some good viewership. But like we've talked about before, the fan kind of connection with these mostly TikTok creators hasn't necessarily been as rabid and defined and as strong as it has been with YouTubers. So it'll be interesting to see if these people pick up a lot of her dolls.
And Josh, of course, you meant not Hulu, but she has a multi-million-dollar deal with Netflix. So
of course, I had Hulu on my brain.
Get your streaming services correct.
I had Hulu on my brain because per your recommendation, I've been watching Only Murders in the Building.
Oh my God. And do you like it?
Love it.
It's so good, right? Are you on season one?
Yeah, season one. Still, don't spoil it for me.
I'm not, but I have to start season two. I'm just trying to slog through the end of like Law and Order or Organized Crime. You can imagine. It's like, I love Elliot, but like, I don't love the series, but I have to get through it. Anyway, moving on. We have a really great interview coming up today with Aliyah Dobb, Chief Content Officer of Soul Savvy. Very interesting. He's been in the business for a long time. But before we get to that, we need to talk about YouTube. YouTube is now claiming that 36.4% of its viewership is coming from connected TV, according to eMarketer's latest quarterly digital video trends report. That is up from 34.4% in 2021 and 30.5% in 2020. Mobile is still the largest, which is 49.3%, but it's down from last year. And this is significant. For me, it's significant in a lot of ways. It's significant primarily because what does YouTube want more than anything? What do all these digital platforms want more than anything? They want the TV dollars. So when they can now say, like, people that want to spend money on TV, you're still spending money on TV because a lot of our viewership is on TV. So that's like a huge win for them. I also think it's notable that the viewership is sort of shifting from mobile. It's slow, but it's steady. It's happening. And they expect that it's going to continue to go that route, which is just, I always just think back on like my experience at Facebook when it was just all about mobile. And I just think, I mean, I don't know if it's the pandemic or what it is, but people are back to kind of watching things on their TV. I mean, we do YouTube Kids on our TV. That's the majority of place where we, you know, where we watch. So I think it's really, really interesting. Josh, thoughts on this?
Quick side note, YouTube TV has also surpassed 5 million accounts, making it the US's biggest internet-based pay TV service. Mm-hmm. That's from a recent Variety article. Mm-hmm. They passed Hulu, which as of April 2nd had 4.1 million Hulu plus live TV subscribers, a decline of 200,000 over the first 3 months of 2022. So YouTube also making some inroads in the pay internet-based TV service race there as well. So that's a fun step for everybody and shows how YouTube really wants to take over and dominate the TV. It'll be interesting to see what kind of advertising dollars YouTube gets on its connected TV devices and through the YouTube TV service this year, because it's going to be a big election year with the midterms. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that when it happens. I think this is all super interesting because it kind of belies this other idea that YouTube is not even slowly anymore, but has become this place for more professionally produced, longer creator-generated content.
I was going to say creator-generated because then they tried to do it. It wasn't really, it didn't really last, but creator-generated.
Right. Creator-generated content. So you have all of these YouTube videos that because of the way the algorithm works and the ads on the algorithm work, creators wanted to make longer and longer. They hit that 10-minute mark. They got really good at making longer videos. And people now want to watch them in a lean-back environment with a connected device that they can just speak into instead of type and search for. I remember like the big unlock that we all thought was going to happen in like 2007, 2008, 2009 was you're on your TV, you go to the channel guide on your TV, and you see like MSNBC, and then right below MSNBC, you'd see like Phil DeFranco. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be it.
That's what Pluto TV was initially. Pluto TV was initially just curated. That was the whole concept, was curated YouTube channels. And it turns out that that's not really what people want.
Right. Correct. People want to be able to watch whatever they want, whenever they want. And they want to be able to speak into a device that surfaces for them the type of content they're looking for. Mm-hmm. So I think once that advent in the technology came around, then it was like game over. It's like, oh, I can search for Mr. Beast very easily on my TV because I can just speak it into my remote.
Yeah.
But then also couple this with the fact that YouTube is losing some market share in a pretty fast rate to TikTok, especially among younger demos.
Yes.
This is all from a recent TechCrunch article with data from Custudio. And they noted back that in June 2020, that's the month when TikTok began to outrank YouTube in terms of the average minutes per day people ages 4 through 18 spent accessing the two platforms. TikTok overtook YouTube then for the first time. Mm-hmm. The younger demographic spent an average of 82 minutes per day on TikTok versus 75 minutes per day on YouTube. Now it's 91 minutes per day on TikTok, with just 56 minutes per day on YouTube. Those numbers were taken at the end of 2021. So it's, you put those kind of two stats together, plus there's this other report that recently came out where it's talking about how for younger generations as well, TikTok and Instagram are challenging not just YouTube for kind of timeshare, but impacting Google's search traffic as well.
Yeah. It's funny, like, I didn't know what that sort of meant. I remember seeing that a stat like that, like, it was like, there was a stat like that several years ago where it was like Facebook was impacting Google's search traffic. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, I still Google things, but it's like, no, if I want to find a great hotel, what am I doing? Am I going to Google being like, great hotel? Maybe, but I'm also going to go to like my network, whether it's Facebook or it's Instagram, to be like, tell me the best hotel in Palm Springs or whatever it is. Like, and that's, that impacts the search date, like from at Google, because I would, I'm either doing that at the same time or doing it instead of. I find that kind of fascinating because it's a different way to think about search, right?
Totally. So Prabhakar Raghavan is the senior vice president who runs Google's knowledge and information division. And he recently said, in our studies, something like almost 40% of young people, when they're looking for a place for lunch, they don't go to Google Maps or search.
Yep.
They go to TikTok or Instagram, yep. Which makes total sense for me too, yeah. Because like if I'm looking for something, I rarely, especially how to do something, I rarely go on Google anymore. I'll honestly just go to YouTube first. But I go to YouTube first because it's more this more visually rich environment for me. Okay. To figure out what I'm looking for.
Like, what do you search? Like, what would you search on Google that, or what, like, give me an example.
How to do an Excel formula. Things to see in New York City.
Things to see in New York City, you go to YouTube.
Yeah, see which video gets the most views.
Interesting.
And then go from there.
Interesting. No, I'm not judging it. I'm just
fascinated. And part of that is just because the website experience now is just like, really hard.
Yeah.
With all the different ads, you don't know if it's ghost or not.
I just get really mad because I found out, and I'm sure I was super late to the party, but like if you Google something, like if I know the name of the thing and I want to go to their website, the first thing I click on is not going to be the website. It's going to be an ad for the website. And Google then counts that as if they have surfaced that website for me, even though I knew the name of the thing I was looking for. And I just clicked on that maybe because I didn't realize that was an ad. And then they're paying Google for that, even though like I wasn't confused. I knew where I needed to go.
Lauren, that actually, that scenario actually does sound like you were a little bit confused. Those are some boomer search tactics there.
I know, but like, if I'm just like, I'm serious. I'm really just, I like try to always not click on that. I don't know. It makes me angry.
But so I imagine if your number one app you're on your phone for visually engaging information and entertainment, mm-hmm. is TikTok or Instagram, it's also going to slowly become the place where you go to search things. There was a TikTok that was making the rounds a few weeks ago where someone was saying like, if they want to figure out how to cook something, they don't go to Google or even YouTube anymore. They go to TikTok because it's like a really short videos that get straight to the point that tell you what's up.
I think the discovery, like it, I find I get so frustrated on Instagram because I follow a ridiculous amount of accounts, like probably like 1700, and I can't remember the name of everything, but I'll be like, oh my God, there was that recipe from that like chef that I like that I follow, but it's not coming up in my feed. And I literally have to go through my who I follow to find it. And I wish I could like categorize things or like, it's a really frustrating experience. It's been that way for a long time. And I feel like what a missed opportunity. If you asked anybody at Instagram, they think their search is amazing. They think their search is like, they used to get offended about like people with like in the search team getting like feedback. It's amazing. It's just like, okay.
I think that should be an interesting case study for us. Let's, next time we're going to try to cook something that we don't know how to cook, let's go on these three different platforms and search for a recipe for it and see what happens.
I did it the other day and I couldn't find it. And I had asked my cousin who originally posted it. And I'm like, can you send me that thing? Because I can't remember.
Boomer search tactics from Lauren Schnipper, everybody. Boomer search tactics. It's totally fine. Boomers are capable of going around the internet. It's totally cool.
Let me give a shout out to my cousin Allie, who runs the Broadway Bite. It's an Instagram about Broadway and food. I mean, what more could you want in life? It's amazing. And she posted it and I had to ask her what it was.
So I think the net here is YouTube has always wanted to dominate the TV. That's been a long-term acquisition target for them, is really taking over that lean-back experience and having more people watch YouTube on that device. Kudos to them for accomplishing it. But now you see that they're losing this market share in younger demos to TikTok, and then it's even impacting their greater business of search. You see now why YouTube Shorts is so important for them.
Speaking of YouTube Shorts, before we get to our interview, Josh, I just want to say congratulations. Happy anniversary. It's been 1 year since Shorts has been out. And I just want to say that, like, I'm really happy for you. And I, like, know this has been, this is really, like, you're just, I know how important this has been for you. And just really quickly, that Shorts are generating 30 billion views a day, up 400% from 1 year ago, which doesn't really make sense because it wasn't a thing a year ago. So that's, that sort of doesn't count.
So, maybe it's the first year anniversary of, like, their official launch.
Maybe that. I don't know. Anyway, I just get the scissors out. He really does wear jorts. And it's like, when we were at VidCon and we were, like, practicing and he was wearing jorts, and I was like, Josh, yeah, like, nobody wants to see your calves. Like, we're not, you're not wearing jorts on stage. But maybe he was doing it because he loves YouTube Shorts. I don't know. I didn't want to know.
I just from day one knew this was going to be a priority for them and knew this was something that they had to do because of the different data and information we're looking at right now.
And you were right. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Josh, let's get to our interview.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to Aliyah Dobb, who, Lauren, like you said, is the chief content officer at Soul Savvy. He's also the managing partner at Fevi and has been in the online video creator economy for a while. He was vice president of content and partnerships at Broadband TV forever, since way back in 2012, and was in the greater entertainment industry at large before that. And it's cool to just talk to someone who's kind of taking that expertise and knowledge from being in this industry for such a long time and then applying it to, like, the different content verticals that are shoes and sneaker culture. And at Fevi, he's onboarding creators to Web3 and crypto in a smart, conscious way. So excited to talk to him about it. Ali, thanks so much for coming on. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to get into this with you. So to kick things off, what is Soul Savvy?
Soul Savvy is really an end-to-end platform for sneakerhead. So when you're thinking about kind of the life cycle of a sneaker, you know, pre-release, we help you, you know, understand news around releases. We've got a release calendar. So basically you're equipped with everything you need to know about what's coming out. And then during release, that's where Soul Savvy's tech platform comes in. So we've got two apps. One is called Drop Alerts, which notifies you whenever there's a restock in brands that you're interested in your size. So you actually have a chance at getting sneakers at retail that otherwise, you know, end up selling for exorbitant amounts on reseller sites. And then the third piece is really community. So we've got thousands of members right now paying our monthly fee to basically connect with each other, to help each other buy their sneakers. And so post-release, that's where our second app comes in called Collect, which is our version of a marketplace, except no buyer and seller fees. So if you think about it more like a link in bio for your sneakers, so if you want to, like, show off your collection and flex what you have, keep inventory of all your sneakers, but if you want to buy, sell, or trade, you can as well. So we're really just basically trying to build an ecosystem for hardcore sneakerheads.
And so to follow that up, why are you there?
That's a good question. So I'm wearing many hats, but you know, the main one is chief content officer. So I oversee the content team. We're producing, you know, short form content, long form content across all the major platforms. And so when we're thinking about sneakers and sneaker culture, you know, content plays a big role there. I'm also overseeing our Web3 initiatives. And so in April, we launched our first NFT called the SS4, which was obviously a digital asset, but you could redeem the NFT for an actual physical sneaker. And so I led that initiative. It was the sneaker was designed by Jimo Wong and Justin Taylor, who have done some of the most popular Jordans and Nikes in history. And so that was a really cool initiative for us. So really, you know, it's at Soul Savvy's early stage startup, so everybody's kind of doing a lot of different things. And so for me, that covers Web3 content, helping to grow in international markets and any other ways that can help.
And so why is a company like Soul Savvy creating their own content? Like, how does this differ from a traditional marketing role? I think, like, 5 years ago, this kind of chief content officer role wouldn't really have existed at a company like Soul Savvy, but now it seems almost like a necessity.
sneakers just play such an integral role in culture and entertainment. And when we're thinking about how we as a company acquire customers, you know, there's organic, inorganic, right? And so there's social content. If you think about the dialogue that's happening around sneakers, that's all happening on your key major kind of social media platforms. So we want to be a part of that conversation, right? And if you think about whether it's athletes, celebrities, influencers, they are such a key part of sneaker culture as well. And so Soul Savvy, you know, obviously it makes sense if we want to tap into that, to work with creators, to work in that landscape. So for us, it's really a no-brainer. So we think about it as kind of Soul Savvy, the media company that can kind of like help educate everybody and kind of demonstrate that we're kind of the experts in this space. And then there's Soul Savvy, the tech company that's creating tools, that's creating product that allows people to kind of get the sneakers they want. And then the community is really that third pillar.
And are you trying to do an O&O strategy with the content you create and distribute, or work with pre-existing creators and influencers in this vertical, or a combo of both? What's that breakdown?
It's really a combo of both. I think sneaker news just plays such a big role in the space. So that's more of like where our bite-sized content and like podcast short form content kind of plays a role. But we're absolutely thinking about more premium content as well. So we actually recently shot a pilot and a sizzle for an original show that we're going to pitch to the streamers, and it's hosted by Victor Cruz, and we had Lena Waithe as our first guest. So we're absolutely thinking about like both kind of premium and you know, just like what you would typically see across kind of your social content platforms.
Got it. And how is this different from, like, would this have just been called marketing 5 years ago?
I think so. Media companies have been around for a while, but I think, you know, having companies like think about that strategy as it relates to building audience is for sure something new. But I think I don't really think it's deliberate. I think it's just kind of the natural evolution of how brands are thinking about entering the space. And at least for us, it's really happening organically as we're thinking about kind of like, okay, well, we want to build this brand. We want to build audience. Who cares about this content? And how do we go about making sure we're serving them with the best content possible?
So, and a couple questions, just taking a step back, how long has it been around?
So Soul Savvy's been around, you know, 2018 was when they did their seed. And last July was when they did their Series A, raised about $12.5 million USD in the last round, and have grown pretty quickly. You know, we now have about 7,000 members paying $33 a month for our core offering.
Oh, wow. That's pretty incredible. The sneaker culture is just like vast. And but I'm curious as to how you're working with established brands, like how you got them involved, like you're mentioning, because I understand, like, I feel like I've seen other things like this with on the resale side, but like on the sort of the, you know, established brands, kind of like new products coming out, I feel like that's a bit less common. So like curious how that kind of happened.
Yeah, I think the great thing about Soul Savvy is like, we've got this engaged community of sneakerheads that aren't there to resell, right? We vet our community to make sure that every member is kind of there for the right reason. So
how do you do that? Oh my God, this is like an episode of The Bachelor. Are they there for the right reasons?
It's an application process that we go through. And yeah,
really?
Any bad actors are kicked out.
Like The Bachelor, go on.
the main thing is, so brands know that when they're going to, you know, work with us, that our community like actually cares about sneakers and actually wants to wear them and are going to purchase them for the right reasons. So we're always looking for cool and new ways to collaborate with brands. And one thing that's really piqued my interest recently is helping creators launch their own sneakers, right? So
this was my great segue. I want to understand how you're working with creators.
Yeah. So, you know, super early stages, but we all obviously know like, merch is a top kind of line item for creators. And what, you know, a typical creator would go to is like a t-shirt or a hoodie. And then the larger creators will obviously launch their own product lines in a lot of cool different areas. And so we want to help kind of democratize that process of helping a creator launch their own original sneaker. And that's something that I don't think most creators realize that they can do, because, you know, typically if you're a massive celebrity, you'd expect a deal from like Nike or Adidas, and there's only a handful of creators would even be able to be a part of those conversations. So, mm-hmm. so for us, you know, we've launched 4 of our own sneakers already, 2 custom.
So are these collabs, or these are like bespoke, their own sort of brands, like the collabs with like the Nikes of the world, or they're their own thing?
We've done both. We've released 2 Nikes so far. And then we've released 2 of our own 100% original sneakers. And around the creator concept, we actually want to help creators launch their own brands.
And are you able, because I have a bit of experience with this. I spent some time working at a merch company. So are you guys taking the inventory risk on this? And then like, how is that kind of working out? Because with sneakers and that sort of stuff, you kind of have to, right?
You do and you don't, because you can also do a pre-order, right? And obviously kind of gauge how much you need to produce. And so we work with a company called Garrickson Studio out of Philadelphia, and they've manufactured the sneakers that we've released so far. So we've been able to, you know, develop a great process where, you know, we can do pretty small minimum quantities as well. But yeah, at this stage, we're looking at kind of, you know, building a creator offering there to help creators launch their own sneakers.
That's really cool. Who have you launched with so far?
We have creators. So this is kind of...
Oh, you haven't?
Yeah, this is where we're going with this.
Oh, you're hearing it now. Okay, this is... So creators, how would people figure out... Like, so how are you finding the creators that you might want to work with? Are you guys just reaching out to folks?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of conversations we're having with creators right now, but we're going to start big and kind of go with a handful of creators that we know have a sizable audience that would be interested. And then eventually, like once we've got the process down, open to scaling it to more creators.
And so it's always the question of like, who, you know, I'm having this question all the time in my current job. And just like, I think for the past, you know, I don't know how long I've been working in the creator economy, like over a decade, whose audience converts, right? Like in the magic thing is like, oh, engagement. What does engagement mean? Like, in, you know, obviously we kind of know what it means on a high level, but like, what are the levels of engagement that point to indicators that an audience would convert, right? So what are you guys using as sort of high level metrics to figure out, like, can this creator convert? Do they have to have like done some sort of merch in the past that you can kind of look at? Like, are you surveying their audience? Like, how are you figuring that out? Because I think I'll just also say, I just think a lot of creators and their reps, a lot of whom listen to this, are trying to figure out if their creators kind of can sell, move product.
Yeah. No, it's a really good question. And I think, like, you know, when I was at BBTV, that was a big question around our merch initiatives there, as well as when we were doing something on mobile apps for creators. So I think like the actual medium itself is important. Like, are you launching an app? Are you launching a merch line? Or we've seen in Web3, like creators, you know, how much of their audience is potentially like crypto savvy. And so they throw in a Discord stages event, like, are their fans showing up? So I think it really comes down to like what the offering is, influencer marketing versus merch versus mobile apps, and obviously a lot of other offerings that creators can offer. For us, though, I think the main thing is just like, how badly has this creator really wanted to launch their own sneaker and just didn't know that it wasn't possible, right?
That's huge.
The amount of time that they're willing to invest, like the affinity they have towards the project is definitely a key indicator. And then are their audience, like, do they have a not only an engaged audience, but also like, is their audience likely to also really like push the project and really like get the word out? So it's like, you know, the community is rallying behind the sneaker is super important to us.
No, I think that just the first thing you mentioned, that like, how badly do they want it? Cause I think that like, I don't think I know that like, that's a huge thing. Like, creators got to want the product and then want to sell it, want to push it and hustle. Like, I think it's fair to say for creators, like, they should be one element of like a marketing push, right? Like, you probably have paid and all these other things. But if you have a creator who's like willing to, on a very regular basis, like talk about this, push this, love it, like own it or whatever, like, you're going to, no matter how good the engagement is, the audience isn't going to buy it. And that seems really obvious, but it's actually not necessarily. So that's very interesting. So I want to know who you're talking to, but you're not going to tell me. Okay.
We launched our first sneaker for a massive creator. Let's have them on the podcast.
Done and done. I love it. Do you like drops when you're launching these? Are they limited edition kind of drops?
Yeah, I mean, we've done that in the past. We've done like 24-hour windows. We've done pre-orders. We've done a bunch of different things. Again, I think for us, we want to collaborate with the creators and find out what would work best for their fans.
Great.
And so, Ali, you're also handling some Web3 stuff at Soul Savvy, and that overlaps with some of what you do over at Fetty. Just tell us about like your involvement in this ecosystem real quick.
Sure. Yeah. About a year ago, I co-founded Fetty with 2 close friends of mine. And It's evolved in a few different ways since we launched, but to start, it was really that I was excited about this intersection of creators and crypto and platforms that were emerging to help creators kind of get into the space. And so initially we were looking at Fetty as just like an investment vehicle to invest in some of these companies as they were doing rounds. And so we made a few investments. And then from there, I started to understand like how challenging it is to actually sell creators on Web3 because they're being bombarded by a million different opportunities in real time. And they're new to the space. And a lot of times they could feel like they're being taken advantage of, or they're just not really sure how to navigate. So Fetty just kind of evolved into an agency that's helping onboard creators onto Web3, either by helping them launch NFTs or launch social tokens. And we've partnered with a few different great platforms that were looking for talent. And so we're helping creators understand like what should be our go-to-market strategy, like what are benefits for our token holders that we can offer, and how should we go about telling our fans about this? So what's kind of the social content strategy around that? And so that's been great. And where I want to go with Fetty as kind of the next iteration is we, you know, by helping creators launch either NFT collections or social tokens, we've seen kind of gaps in the space around products. So we're actually going to be developing our own product soon that helps. It's a live streaming product that helps creators connect with their token holders, their super fans, in different ways, because we found that we don't think Twitter Spaces or Discord Stages is kind of the optimal environment for that. So we want to build a new experience around that.
And so what is the value proposition for creators now through your eyes? And then has that changed since this kind of crypto winter has set upon us recently?
Yeah, no, it really hasn't changed. And I think where my viewpoint may differ from others in the space is that I absolutely think that the Web2 platforms are here to stay and are still very important to a creator's journey and ecosystem. So like, I would never tell a creator that you should kind of stop what you're doing and just like focus solely on Web3. Like if you want to build audience, those, you know, mega platforms are where you should do that. Where I do think Web3 adds value is that I do think that there's a certain level of like segmentation of your super fans that you can give exclusive access to, exclusive content, exclusive experiences that make sense in Web3, where your community can be part of your journey. And I do think that people, just like we care about physical ownership of like, let's say sneakers, I do think people care about digital ownership. And Josh, your crypto wallet, I think, will attest to that, because I know you like to collect things.
A little bit, sometimes more so than others, but yes.
Would you agree that like, much like making content, like getting into Web3 for a creator has to be something that like they are passionate about and want to do, not just because they see it as this other thing that they could maybe make money on, right? Like it's got to be something that you like have an idea about why and what you want to sort of sell.
Yeah, and not even just like what you want to sell, but like understand that this is a new way that you can engage with your fans and your community. So A, do you even want to be kind of that up close and personal with your super fans, right? Because it is much more intimate environment. And do you want them to like have a say in your journey? Because I think that's one thing that Web3 enables. It turns the fan into a stakeholder, right? And then absolutely, like if you're a creator and you don't know anything about the space, like I wouldn't just like launch your own NFT. I would just first like poke around, like sign up for different platforms, like, you know, get a MetaMask wallet, like buy an NFT, like learn the whole kind of experience, and be a part of it as a fan instead of a creator, and then see if it's something that you have affinity towards, because it's definitely not, I don't think it's required to be a successful creator. I think it's just a great potential complementary or revenue stream for a creator that's thinking about new ways to like unlock value. Mm-hmm.
Let's say I'm a creator that already has like a Patreon or some type of other subscription service that my audience or a good portion of my audience is already paying monthly money towards me for me creating content that they like and giving them earlier access or special bonuses on top of that, regularly scheduled programming. Mm-hmm. Do I also want to have this NFT stuff or token? If Patreon launches an NFT or a token provisions, does that mean like game over for everybody else? Explain to me in terms of the value prop there.
Yeah, it's a good question. at this stage, I think there is not that much of a difference between what you would call a subscription service where you're kind of tiering your fans with offerings versus what we've seen in the NFT space. Obviously, the only, I would say, core difference is that as a fan, if you're buying an NFT, you're investing like your money, and you could see potential upside. And we've seen, obviously, in this downturn, potential downside, right? And so there's pros and cons to, as a fan, kind of going through that experience, right? Versus, hey, I'm just going to pay $9 a month for this exclusive content, and I know it'll be $9 a month every month. I think what we haven't seen yet is, like, we've seen how quickly the space evolves, right? Where it was a year ago to where it is now, where it's going. So I do think new platforms are going to emerge that do things in innovative ways that a Patreon doesn't or an OnlyFans doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that will probably be like a more crypto native experience where you'll be like, no, this makes more sense for me. But if I was a creator right now, and if I had like a really like burgeoning fan base, and I was already successful on Patreon, I don't know that I would make that leap, because right now there's still a big barrier to entry in crypto. Like, there's only so many people that are savvy, crypto savvy enough to really take part. So if anything, you're going to lose some of those super fans as you kind of go through that funnel. Whereas there's a higher likelihood on a Patreon that, you know, all your true fans will be there.
Yeah. And I guess the value propositions are becoming more distinct in that, like with Patreon, you have this recurring revenue stream too, where I don't think it fluctuates that much. But so maybe in any given month, 5 to 10% up or down in terms of the revenue you're getting from your subscribers, barring any like huge outside circumstances weighing in on the number of people that are subscribed to you. Whereas with NFTs and crypto, it depends on how many, like the resale value, how much percent you're getting of that resale value of your tokens, everything else, which makes it a different part of kind of like a creator's whole package that they have. Where I think, you know, at the beginning of this, we thought maybe they were kind of the same thing, but now maybe they're going to be two totally separate, distinct things where you can have your Patreon, but you can also have like, hey, if you want to own part of my trajectory too and benefit from the upside, here's this NFT for you as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I think we really still don't know how on the Web3 side it's going to shake out, because I think like NFTs are just one way to unlock value for your fans, right? But not everybody's going to care about having this like digital collectible tied to those experiences, right? So I think like similarly with social tokens, we've seen the power of like creating an entire economy around a token that's tied to a community or an influencer, but then how do you make those like robust economies that are going to be like healthy for the long term? Because like that's been a challenge when there's like this huge downturn across the entire sector. Those coins, those social tokens get hammered, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got a lot of, let's say, upset fans that bought this for the right reasons and then have lost money, right? So I think like still a lot of work to be done to make sure that this could be a healthy ecosystem for both the creator and the fan.
Awesome. Love it. Well, if creators want to get in touch with you to launch their own sneaker line, or is that possible? How can people or reps get in touch if they think that their creator might be a good fit?
No, for sure. Ali@soulsavvy.com is my email for all things sneaker related. And I can also be reached on Twitter, Ali_digital.
Awesome. I love it. Well, I'm very excited to see the sneakers that come out. I think I'm really fascinated by these, like, as Josh is sort of saying, it's, you know, not to like belittle it in any way, but it's these interesting, very interesting marketing techniques to like get like massive conversion. I think it's really, really cool. So I'm excited to see what creators launch. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, Ali, this has been great. Thank you.
So let's talk about the key to selling on social. What do we think, Josh?
Well, first off, anyone wanting to monetize their content and create products for their followers has got to get on Spring. It's a 100% free platform for anyone to create and launch absolutely anything instantly. There are over 180 things to choose from, digital downloads, hundreds of print-on-demand products, and even NFTs.
Let's double-click on the word instant. The creator economy and trends on social media can change in a matter of seconds. If something happens in your community, you have to be able to act fast. That's the beauty of this platform.
That's exactly exactly right, Lauren. So imagine you hit 100,000 followers on TikTok. In the comments, people are asking for a celebratory piece of merch to commemorate the event. You can leverage the speed and ease of the Spring platform to offer that product 5 minutes later.
Best of all, Spring always has a finger on the pulse of social commerce. There's new trending products added every season. They know what's selling now and what your fans want to see. For example, Spring launched these trending products recently for you to create over the summer. Notebooks, custom plushies, jerseys and swim shorts, bucket hats, desk mats. We could go on.
Want to jump in and start creating? Head to Spring, that's SPRI.NG, and sign up.
Josh, any uploads or downloads for you?
Yeah, quick one, Lauren. Spotify is expanding video podcast publishing to creators in 6 more countries. It is currently in the US, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the UK, and now we'll be expanding to Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Brazil, and Mexico. This is a big one for them because if they can figure out how to onboard a lot more people onto their platform, this is content that they don't have to pay for that they could have advertising around.
Yep, absolutely. Which I know one of the issues right now with advertising on direct sales through Spotify is it's pretty low. So more content, better sales.
Yeah, especially this video stuff. Video ads, you know, higher CPM.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Josh, I think we did it.
Lauren, I think that's it. I'll see you in the aisles of an unknown LA Walmart scoping out the Addison Rae dolls while filming a YouTube short.
Can't wait for people coming at me being like, there is a Walmart in Burbank.
If not there, next week on Creator Upload. Today's show was produced by Lauren Schnipper, me, Joshua Cohen, and Carmen Lissette Suarez. It's edited by Jason Kang, and original music is by London Bridge, who you can check out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. Make sure you subscribe to Creator Upload wherever you're listening to this podcast. While you're there, give us a rating, leave us a comment. If you want to talk, hit us up at info@creatorupload.com. We really love getting your emails. If you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. If you love it, recommend it to everybody. Thanks for listening to Creator Upload, and we will be back next week.